Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio. What's up, everyone? Kevin Gianni with Frederick Patnaud.
Hey, hi, Kevin. Hi, everybody.
Hello, it's dry here in Denver. I'm in Denver.
It's like the story of the traveling renegade people, because every week, you know, we call in from a different city.
We've already done that, though, man, with the Renegade Health Show. It'd be nice not to have to travel so much.
So what's new, Kevin?
Oh, man, I did the weekend cleanse last weekend.
Oh, yeah?
I did it. Well, I'm not telling the truth. I actually did it during the week instead of on the weekend, just because the weekend we were going to be traveling. And so I did it during the week, which is fine, which we've done with the weekend cleanse to say, hey, you know, if we'd like you to do it on the weekend, but if you can't do it on the weekend, you can't do it during the week. It was great. You know, I haven't done a cleanse in a long time. And I've been saying that I wanted to go up to True North to see Dr. Goldhammer and do a water fast. But, you know, with a baby, you know, it's just really not something that you know, right now, Anne Marie and I decided we're just not going to do it yet, just because, you know, we don't want to get involved with staying at a place and having a babysitter and that sort of thing. So the weekend cleanse, I figured it'd just be a good thing to do. So a couple of interesting insights. Number one, the water fast on the first day was so easy. I actually love it. I kind of want to do some sort of regular water fast like that, maybe even monthly, maybe even, you know, twice a month. It just was really good. Did you have the same experience? Do you tend to struggle when you have a water fast or no, Fred?
Not the first day. I mean, it's kind of like you, it's kind of a revelation, you know, wow, I feel so good. Until about 3 or 4 in the afternoon where I just kind of need to eat, you know, but then you wait it out and that feeling goes. And then when you break the fast, it's a great experience. I don't think I would do it every single week. I think it can be a little depleting for, you know, if you're not actively trying to lose weight, but I mean, all the research is there, you know, it's a great thing to do.
Yeah. But then the second day. So for me, for some reason on juices, that second day, like I was just really spacey, kind of out of it and just really, really hungry. And it was really strange because normally when I fast, I don't kind of experience this. You know, I've even done, you know, 5, 6, 7 day juice fasts. I've done 5 day water fast. And I've never really felt this way before. So I don't know what, maybe my body really did need to cleanse. You know, maybe there was, you know, just some things going on, or it just was the timing, or my metabolism is faster right now. I don't know, but I just, you know, I was really, 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 really anticipating having some sort of solid food the next day.
Well, the second day is the hardest, I think. I mean, you were working. I did it actually on the weekend. You know, as we're supposed to.
Come on.
No, but, you know, I mean, it does work a little bit better when on that particular day, not the Friday, but the Saturday, you don't have to do anything, right?
Yeah.
But the second day is tough. And how was your third day?
Oh, third day is great. I mean, I have one smoothie a day in the morning, a nice big smoothie a day in the morning, every day now. Since January, it was something that I'd restarted up again. I mean, I could have 2 smoothies a day every single day for the rest of my life and have a dinner. So it's like, what is that? What was that? 2 shakes a day and then a sensible dinner. What was that? Weight Watchers or Jenny Craig? I forget which one that is, but it kind of feel that way. So two green smoothies a day, big ones, you know, like 32 to 48, maybe even 64 ounces a day. And then a regular, you know, healthy organic dinner. I could probably do that every day for the rest of my life. I just love green smoothies. I love them. They're so good. They're so energizing, filling. So, you know, you're not getting a ton of calories in the morning with breakfast, you know, just with like, you know, eggs and sausage and bacon and pancakes and whatever else, you know, you want to eat. It's just a really great tool to keep your hunger down. So the third day was just fantastic. You know, it was just great to have delicious smoothies and easy ones to make, not too complicated. Great for anyone who doesn't even know what a green smoothie is. It doesn't even look green, so no one freaks out. Just really good, really nice way to kind of close out on the third day.
Cool. Well, we'll give everybody more details, I guess, as we release that program, because there's a few more things as part of the cleanse, right? We had like the holy basil as part of it, you know, a few protocols, but we wanted to test it out ourselves. We had a bunch of people take it, and then you had the raw food challenge before you organized this part of Renegade Health, and I had the green cleanse. So we're kind of putting it all together in this sort of a, you know, condensed cleanse that everybody can do.
Yeah, a condensed cleanse that just kind of is built upon the years of experience we've had before, and a condensed cleanse that, one, I could just give to my mom and she would just say, oh, I think I can do this. And two, for people like Fred and I and you who are listening probably, who knows all this stuff. And, you know, sometimes even we know this stuff, 5-day juice fast, somewhat daunting. You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things. You're like, do I really need 5 days of juice? You know, I'm eating healthy. This is one of those things you can just kind of like hop in for 3 days, hop out, get back to your stuff. And, you know, look, there's a lot of people who abuse cleansing. It's kind of like a binge and purge kind of behavior. And I've seen it, you know, all throughout the years that Anne-Marie and I were on tour. We talked to people and they'd say, oh, you know, I just went away for the weekend and now I'm doing like a 4-day, 5-day, 6-day, 10-day cleanse. And then they'll go away again and they'll just, you know, they'll go on a cruise or something, and they'll just eat everything from the buffet, binge on all the different types of food. And then they'll come back and they'll think that cleansing is going to, you know, right their wrongs. I think it tends to shock the body even more. It's almost better that you kind of maintain, you know, your healthy lifestyle throughout. And yeah, when you go on a cruise, maybe you do eat a few things, but you know, just don't like super overindulge. And then when you come back, you can cut back a little bit. I think it's just kind of, you know, dulling out those peaks and valleys and just kind of making it more of a fluid wave, I think is really one of the most valuable ways to not stress out about this stuff, you know, and actually keep your body always ready and not shock it so much.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, people can get addicted to cleansing, although I never did because, to be honest, you know, a long juice fast, it kind of sucks, you know. You said it like it's daunting, 5 days, and I mean, the last water fast that I did, I guess it was a 7-day cleanse or 10 days if you include like before and after, because I kind of prepared myself, you know, eating fruit only and so on. It's not something I would do every month. I mean, it is work. Like it is, that's what Dr. Goldhammer says, you know, fasting is hard work. It's kind of weird saying because you're not doing anything, but it requires your effort. It requires your persistence and your motivation, and it's not easy. You know, condensed cleanse kind of gets you back on track. It's better than not doing it, you know? It's better than thinking about doing a 10-day cleanse and not doing it. So you do 3 days, and maybe at the end of the 3 days, you decide, hey, this time I'm going to go for 7 days or 5 days, because you feel like it, you're over the hump or something. Like the first couple of days are difficult.
Dude, you exactly said it. And I would say the last 6 or 7 cleanses that I've done, it's always been a feel thing. It's never been, oh, I'm going to do this for 7 days. It's been, I think the last time, the time before this that I did a cleanse, I was starting to get a little bit of a cold. Anytime I start to get a little bit of cold, I shoot right to juices. I load up on vitamin C powder, zinc, echinacea tincture. You know, I do it, you know? And I was like, I don't know how long this is going to last. And I did it the first day. I had, you know, little sniffles. Second day, I felt a little bit better. I'm like, I'm just going to keep doing this till I don't want to do it anymore. I think I did it for 4 days. And on day 3 and day 4, instead of just having juices, because I didn't really want to define it, I just wanted to kind of ride it out, I started to add some smoothies in, and it felt really good. And I think that approach to cleansing is actually really valuable too, because look, if you do 3 days of cleansing and you were trying to do 7 and you didn't make it to 7, you still did 3 days of cleansing. I mean, you can't beat yourself up for that. I mean, you had the initial motivation, you actually took the action to do it, you went out to the grocery store, you bought all the stuff, you got the juicer ready, you got the blender ready, you got all these things together, and then you're beating yourself up for not finishing 7 days. I mean, who's to say your body even needed 7 days? You know,
exactly.
3 days is cool, you know, just do it and then try to pick it up again. You know, maybe later, you know, maybe in the next couple months. And I think that's the best approach to it, because, you know, we look at these numbers like, you know, 7 days is going to take us to the promised land. And who knows, you know, all our bodies are different. It's kind of like this one size doesn't fit all philosophy. That's the way to look at it. You know, mm-hmm. Just because someone says 7 days doesn't mean your body is going to turn from, you know, cesspool to, you know, swimming pool. How do you like that one? I just made that up.
That's a good one.
Oh, man. So enough about the cleanse. We hope that you guys get interested in that. I do want to do a little side note here. I am writing a book for Hay House. Hay House is publishing, you know, the first like official published book for Renegade Health. And in the book, I went and did some research on snake oil. You want to hear what I found out, Fred?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, tell me.
You know, I've always wondered because, you know, sometimes, and even myself, I've been called a snake oil salesman before by haters on the internet. And I've always wondered what it actually meant. And so I went and I did some research, and there's actually a really interesting article on NPR. You can just search the history of snake oil, NPR, and you'll find the article, and it's probably more interesting than what I'm going to tell you here because it's a little more detailed. But essentially, snake oil, when the Chinese were immigrating over here and they actually had Chinese labor camps, and it's kind of a part of American history that a lot of people don't know about, the Chinese did bring an oil that was from the Chinese water snake. And this was an oil that they used on a regular basis. I believe they even used it topically, and super high in omega-3. And so real snake oil is actually good for you. So it's kind of like this, you know, this thing that people don't know. They just assume that snake oil is a supplement that doesn't work, or some sort of flashy hoopla kind of thing that doesn't even bring real results. What happened then is a guy named Clark Stanley found out about snake oil, and he decided that he was going to try to get snake oil from rattlesnakes. And he started selling this snake oil liniment all throughout the country, and kind of like the traveling salesman, putting advertisements and little flyers and, you know, all the stuff, all the vintage stuff that you may or may not have seen about snake oil, or just about that old, like, I don't know, even campy kind of like vaudeville kind of show.
Circus. Cures everything.
Exactly. You know, and he actually used to even kill the snakes on stage. I would love to see a video of this. You know, unfortunately, there's none. But I'd love to see, you know, this history in action. And so he was the guy who made a big deal about snake oil, brought it to a lot of people. And I think in 1906, Pure Food and Drug Act started cracking down because of Clark Stanley. They started cracking down, and they actually went and tested the snake oil, and they found that what he was selling didn't even have snake oil in it. There was no remnants of any snake oil. It was essentially just a bunch of mineral oil and maybe a few other things. So he really was selling something that did not even exist. He got fined $20.
Which is like
a slap on the wrist, just like the pharmaceutical companies.
What is that? What year was that?
That was in 1906. I remember reading somewhere that it's about the equivalent of $400 or $500.
Okay, yeah.
Today's money. So yeah, he really got the crackdown.
Cool. So you're really not a snake oil salesman, Kevin.
No. But I'm interested now in real snake oil. It might be actually really valuable. But I mean, I think it would be very difficult to sell it.
just don't mention it if you.
Yeah. Just
you don't try. Mention.
Yeah. Special oil, high omega-3. So what else we got? We got some heavy metal stuff here, Fred.
Cool. What kind of heavy metal? Metallica. What's your favorite heavy metal band?
I have to admit that I listen to a lot of Metallica in my
still. Oh,
Oh no, not anymore. Okay. I can't bring myself to listen to it. It's so angry.
Oh, I don't care about the angry. It's just it hasn't aged well. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
But when you're in the mood, you know. Yeah.
I did meet James Hetfield, who is the lead singer of Metallica, at a Michael Pollan talk in Marin. How cool is that?
Yeah, so, you know, the Metallica guys, they're into raw food diets, right? Or healthy
least,
foods or something, organic.
At least healthy foods. So anyway, heavy metals, big news coming out of naturalnews.com. I don't know if you guys know Mike Adams, but Mike Adams has been a colleague and a friend of ours, Anne-Marie and I, for, when did we initially meet Mike? Holy cow, did we meet Mike 8 years ago? No. We met Mike 6 years ago. That's still a lot of time. We met Mike 6 years ago at the Raw Spirit Festival in Arizona, in Sedona. And since then, I've followed Mike's work. And Mike's gone from, you know, health to survivalist to conspiracy theory to, I mean, he's really run the gamut over the last 6 years in terms of what he publishes. What he's publishing now, I think, is probably the most revolutionary and coolest thing that's ever happened in the health industry. I don't know about ever. Well, let me take it. I don't know about ever, but I think it's answering questions that we need to know. And so what Mike did was Mike took a lot of his own personal money and funded a lab that he now has set up where he tests all different types of food products that you find in the supermarket, in the health food store, protein powders, seaweeds. He's doing all of this right now. And you can find all the information at labs.naturalnews.com. Again, we're not getting paid to talk about Mike and what he's doing right now. I just think what he's doing is absolutely amazing. And so what is really valuable to me and the way I look at this and the importance really is the fact that we're eating this stuff ourselves, but we're also giving it to our son. We're giving it to Hudson. And some of the work that Mike's done, particularly with rice protein powder, is shocking because rice protein powder from generally it's being sourced from China, tends to have very high or higher than, you know, rice from, say, the United States, heavy metal toxicity. And this is a big deal. I mean, think about it. You make your smoothie every morning. You have your vegan rice protein because you don't want to, you know, overload on whey protein or animal protein or something like that. You know, it's kind of one of those things that you know, a healthy person decides and say, hey, I don't need to eat that much meat, or I don't even need to eat any meat, or I don't need to do this or that. I want to have some rice protein. You put your rice protein powder in your smoothie and you're adding heavy metals to your smoothie. Wow. I mean, shocking, right?
What else is he testing? I mean, I know it's new, but has he tested anything else? Is he planning on testing more, like a wider range of food products, including perishable products?
Yeah, absolutely. That's all in the works. I mean, it's an issue of, I talked to him the other day. I mean, it's an issue of funding, you know, figuring out what's kind of the most valuable things to test that, you know, the most people are using so they can really have a database that's really valuable to people. And he's tested everything. He told me he's tested like everything in his house. You know, personally, he hasn't published everything yet because what he's doing is, which is fantastic, is that if he finds something in his lab, he sends the same thing off to another lab to third-party validate if the results are actually correct. And, you know, everything so far has come up correct that he's found. So protein powders he's done, you know, some of the rice protein powders and some of the pea and other type protein powders, he's done those. You can find those at labs.naturalnews.com. He's done seaweeds, done some green powders, I believe. So he's really starting to run the gamut of this like superfood kind of space and just identify what stuff is good and what stuff isn't, you know, because yes, there is going to be some metal toxicity in some of our foods. That's just kind of the nature of, you know, our toxic environment. But some of the levels that he's finding are just kind of unacceptable. What's cool about the actual rice protein powder is that he tested some rice from California, some organic rice from California, and it didn't have any of these heavy metals. So there is rice that doesn't have it. It's not just all rice. All rice isn't toxic. It doesn't have all heavy metals. I want to make sure everyone's clear about that. Rice is a good health food to eat. But I think it's more of a sourcing issue than it is, you know, the actual blanket rice, peas, apples, anything like that. It's where it's coming from. And I think as we evolve in the next 10, 15 years, I think that's going to be the real focus on our food sourcing. And we're going to have to really get more committed to looking at what's there and where the food is being grown, because there is a risk for toxicity as our environment continues to become more toxic.
Well, have you noticed, Kevin, and everybody listening, how in the last few years, more and more fruits and things like that are coming from China, being imported from China? I mean, we know China for other things, you know, all the pretty much consumer items that we buy and so on. But now they're exporting a lot of food. Like you see apples coming from China. I mean, you got to look at where the food is coming from more and more, because I don't trust almost anything coming from China, but sometimes you don't really have an alternative, and at least you're not putting it in your mouth. But food from China, I just don't trust it. I don't know about you, Kevin, but this doesn't surprise me, the whole heavy metals in rice protein powder and so on.
And I mean, you can look at and you can do research online or read a good book about China and its industrial age. I mean, you know, America was in an industrial age, you know, decades and decades ago. But this industrial age in China is it, in many cities, there's ridiculous amounts of pollution. It just seems to me that you know, you kind of want to avoid that. I mean, I wouldn't want to eat a bunch of vegetables from Pittsburgh in the steel days. You know, I mean, like back in the 1920s and 30s and 40s when you know, the steel mills were just like really, really cranking along in Pittsburgh. I mean, there's pictures that my grandfather has of you know, people who worked in the steel mills and you know, they'd just be covered in soot and it'd be just cloudy and this fog of, not even fog, this like cloud of soot moving through Pittsburgh on a regular basis. And, you know, I don't know, man, I don't want my lettuce growing in that type of environment. And, you know, and again, I have not been to China. And so I'm probably speaking ignorantly at some level, but in another level, not. And I'm sure there's great places where food is grown in China. But for what I know existing about it, I'd be very cautious.
Mm-hmm. I mean, wasn't there a story also a couple of years ago? I think it was a major newspaper or something that in New York City tested all of the sushi bars and the fish that was being served there and found outrageous amounts of heavy metals in the fish that were considered safe by the official guidelines.
Yes, this was, I believe it was 2007. It was either 2004 or 2007. And that was a really scary study when that came out. Mercury levels were super high. I mean, to the point where eating, you know, six of those, of the sushi rolls, you know, the cut sushi rolls of like tuna, that was an experience that could be considered a toxic experience.
And there's a disconnect between what people think, you know, is healthy food and what's being advertised and the reality. I mean, it seems like the official guidelines don't have time to catch up with what's actually happening in terms of sourcing and so on. I mean, I know shrimps from Asia are ridiculously toxic. And then that's what you find. I mean, if there's no mention of where it's coming from, it is probably coming from there.
Yeah. I'd like to know about goji berries. It's my understanding that the goji berries, a lot of people like to say that they're grown in Tibet, but I have a feeling that I remember reading an article from a very well-qualified source mentioning that, you know, goji berries really don't, you know, the ones that we're getting, they're not really coming from Tibet. They're coming from China. And is this a good or a bad thing? I don't know. Maybe I should bring this up to Mike, see if he can test a few things.
Cool. Well, really great information about that. We're looking forward to seeing what's gonna happen next with this study.
Yeah, definitely check it out, labs.naturalnews.com.
All right. Well, I think we get some more concise information today. I mean, now we've been doing this for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, I think we're on it. It's good.
Good. Well, we're looking forward to your comments, guys, and also your questions. I think we should start answering questions probably by the next podcast. And it's on iTunes, too. So if you'd prefer to get the podcast directly to your iTunes account so you can load it on your iPhone and so on. And also, I think on the iPhone directly and the iPad and maybe even Android devices, there's a podcast app that works with iTunes so you can download them directly there.
Yeah, so you could take us on your run or your walk or your yoga class. I don't know. Does anyone have iPhones on in yoga? I wouldn't be surprised. Bye.
See you next time.